Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everybody to another edition of Outside Looking In. My name is Bruce Negrin. It's Tuesday night, 8 p.m. April 21st. Where's the time going? I don't know where it's going. But I know that we got an hour we got to spend to talk about the things, about the issues that emanate from the Montgomery County. That's right, we're talking about Montgomery County and the issues that talk about here and just about 19 miles down the road, which is Washington, D.C. Because I'll tell you something, man. It's getting hectic down there. It really is getting hectic. Who knows what's going on because all of these people yelling and screaming, partisanship, it's getting nuts. I mean, when I want to vote for Frank Underwood, then you know something's wrong. Then something is wrong. But anyway, this is, as I said before, this is the program Outside Looking In. My name is Bruce Negrin. This is two-way talk radio, so I'd love to hear what you have to say about your opinions and the things that are going on in the outside world. My phone number is 773-897-6423. That's 773-897-6423. If I sound a little disheveled, I am. My wife likes to pack a whole bunch of stuff in just before I go on the air. We're giving my youngest son a haircut. He was, when he was really young, got stabbed by a scissors when he was getting a haircut. They clipped his ear, so now he hates going to the haircutter and makes a big scene of it. So my wife is down here. She gets the Italian accent. She's like, she takes my son. She's like, "Come on, then you sit down now. You sit down. How's your father? How's your father?" If you're from the New York area, you understand, because pretty much every one of us in New Rochelle who was a kid had an Italian barber. You had Dominic, you had George, you had Franco, everybody out there. It was just like, "Hey, how you doing? How's your father? How's your father?" "My father's good. What do you care? I'm the one getting the haircut." Best part about haircuts, too, like, I don't understand what they think they're going to do if they didn't do it right. Because you get a haircut, and they give you the mirror, and they're like, "How do you like the back?" "I hate the back." "What are you going to do, glue it back? You're going to put glue on my head and glue the hair back? Come on now. There's nothing you can do." And then they give you the haircut. You know they went through the distance, but you know that you should just speak up in the chair sometimes. You're like, "Oh, stop, 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 stop. Don't do it. Don't do it. You cut enough." "No, no, no. I said number three. I said a number three, not a number two. Now I look like Mike D from the Beastie Boys. What's up with that? What's up?" You know, that's one of the things. It's like when you get a haircutter, you stay with them for pretty much your whole life. You don't bounce around. It's not something, especially if you got different kind of hair. It's like my hair is pretty easy to cut, so I can go anywhere. Sometimes if I just like getting a fresh fade or if I want to keep it normal, see what happens. But there are times you still like your guy. He knows what's going on, but the barber wields so much power. He's able to push your head this way, push your head that way. You know, in the middle of giving you a haircut, he goes, answers the phone, talks to his friend in Italian. "Going on, man? Just cut my hair and get me out of here." You know, it should be a mill. It should be a puppy mill, right? Just get my hair cut, let me go. I can talk about anything, really. Just throw me a topic and I'll give you an opinion on it, because that's what this program is about. Outside Looking In is about talking about the events that are affecting our day-to-day lives and then me just putting my spin on it, because I've been lucky enough to talk to a couple people who have actually said that not that they agree with what I'm saying, but they understand where I'm coming from. You know, and I think that's a good thing, because hopefully I get to talk for what's on your mind, what you're thinking about. And then it's not like my opinion is so special. It's just that I have the radio show and I'm the one talking about it. But what happens is it goes to show that more people than just you behind that wheel sitting in at traffic or at a red light in Montgomery County for about 4 hours is thinking the same thoughts that you are. They see something, they have it in their mind, they're thinking it. They understand it. That's what we're here for. Phone number 773-897-6423. It's 773-897-6423. I was reading the Washington Post. I'm back into politics right now. It was hard not to be, because with the 2016 election coming, boy, the inundation is ready. It's here. It's already in. You know, the Republicans have three guys. They got Rubio, Rand Paul, and Ted Cruz. Hillary came out of the gate. She goes, "I'm running. I'm running." Trying to squash anybody from sneaking in there. So she gets in a van and drives around the country. and probably one of the most staged listening tours of all time. I mean, it really, just stop somewhere. Just get out of the motorcade, stop somewhere, and actually talk to somebody one time. Everything's a photo op. Everything's got to be perfect. I don't like it. I don't like it at all because it's not real. It's not real politics. It's not real people. You know, and Hillary Clinton, I mean, I'll tell you, though, people talk about Hillary Clinton or any of these candidates. They've been to New Hampshire and or Iowa more than I ever been. I've never been to the heartland of this nation. I've been to Kansas, Kansas City, St. Louis. Never been to Iowa. And what kills me is that people in Iowa can select. I mean, the straw poll in Iowa, the people in New Hampshire. You know, how many electoral votes do they have? But they can decide the primaries right off the bat. The whole electoral process has to be changed. It's not what I wanted to talk about, but I truly believe it. Living in New York State, this is when I really got upset and I felt disenfranchised. And the reason I felt that is because no matter who was running as a Republican wasn't winning. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, how I never voted for George Bush. Not that I wanted to. I voted for Al Gore and Kerry. The Kerry vote was just so I could do... So my mother-in-law wouldn't get on me. Oh, you let George Bush, he ruined everything. George Bush caused the rainforest to come down. All right. Thank you. Thanks for your uninformed opinion. Appreciate it. Love to hear it. Let's talk again next week. Bye-bye. No, but I mean, that's the reason why I voted for John Kerry. But in New York, I didn't feel like I was wasting my vote. Everybody's like, and these people who talk about it's your duty to go out there and vote. Okay, yeah, I see where you're coming from. But if you haven't read a newspaper, if you haven't picked a candidate, if you are going to the polls and deciding on that day, oh, his name looks good. It's like picking a racehorse at Aqueduct. Oh, you know, a pizza pie. Oh, I like that name. Let's bet heavy on him in the sixth. You know, it's not the way to do it. An uninformed vote is not a good vote. You have the right to vote, but you also have the duty to understand what you're voting for and why you're voting for it. Not because someone played saxophone on the Arsenio Hall show. Not because someone rode a Harley across country into 19 different counties in New Hampshire or whatever's going to happen because there's some guy who's thinking about it, who'd be the governor of Ohio. You know, I mean, that's I'm being the common man, the common man. Because someone had done something so superficial. That's why you vote for him? I don't think that's a very informed vote. And the young people, all right? We got to get the young people. Got to get the young people out there to vote. Got to get them to vote. Jello shots. Woohoo. Get the young people to vote. Got to get them out there. Young people, the future's yours. Yeah, the future is yours. You're 18 years old. What are you thinking about? You thinking about the presidency? You thinking about anything? The only people who were 18 years old thinking about anything were the ones of the Vietnam era. Those guys, I could understand why they went to vote. Those guys, I mean, it was a life or death situation or a get drafted situation at the least. If you don't want to be overly dramatic, but I don't think I was in that statement. You know, those are the ones that they're not caring about taxes. They're caring about their lives, about being drafted, going to Vietnam, across the world, 18 years old. You're ready to get, you know, ready to start your life, and this is what happens. Anyway. Right now, an 18-year-old, always thinking about, oh, I'm going to go to college, drink Jello shots, man, get into a fraternity, take 21 shots in an hour. What, are you an idiot? That's the other thing about hazing I don't understand. If we're going to go that route for a second, I was in a fraternity as a Kappa Alpha at Vanderbilt University, Kappa Alpha Order. And, you know, when I was getting hazed, yeah, I took my abuse, no doubt about it. You know, you get humbled a little bit to be part of the bigger group. But there wasn't anything so humbling or so degrading or put me in danger that I would do it. You know, it's one of those things where a teacher once said to me, I did something wrong, and they said, why'd you do it? I said, well, everybody else was doing it, and they gave me the perfect line. Oh, if they were jumping off the Empire State Building, would you do it? No, I'd hurt myself. It looked like fun what these guys were doing, but I'm not going to do something to hurt myself. So, I mean, I who and what? This is why this 21 drinking age. Also, boy, we're going to cover everything before we're 10 minutes into the show. But this 21 drinking age to me is not probably the best idea. I think it should be 19. I don't think kids should be legally able to drink in high school. But at 19, it's like when you start drinking, that's why we have binge drinking. Because once somebody gets a beer in their hand, they go nuts. Once they get a six-pack in their hand, a 12-pack, they go nuts. because it's not at their leisure. It's not, you know, I'm going to go to the drugstore. I'm going to go to the Montgomery County store. Talk about that later, too. But and get a six-pack and have a beer. The first night of college for me was an eye-opener because I had a couple drinks before I got to college. You know, being there, I didn't OD on freedom the first night I was there. Mom and Dad are not here. I'm going to drink till I throw up and get bloodshot eyes. My first night of college, I was literally stepping over people in my freshman dorm to trying to get to my room. It's like they had never seen freedom before, and that's what happens when you give freedom. It's a case in point to anybody and everyone. I mean, you can OD on freedom. If you don't have the freedom comes responsibilities. I remember when I first riding my bike to Italian Village in Westchester County in New Rochelle. I had money in my pocket. I had my bike. I had freedom. I could take quarters and buy a slice of pizza for $1.25. I could buy two slices, three slices, and then I could go to Gristiti's and buy some ice cream. I did that once. I OD'd on my own freedom. It's like I bought a bunch of slices of pizza, went over there and bought some ice cream, sat out at Carpenter's Pond. Actually, it wasn't ice cream. It was Ringdings. I ate the freaking box of Ringdings. I ate a whole box of Ringdings. I had a hard time biking home because I was like, not feeling good at all. Guess who? I OD'd on freedom. Lesson learned. But there's a movement on college campuses. I know that was talked about a couple years ago. I know Ohio State and somebody else was saying it. It's to let the kids on college campuses drink again. Because guess what's happening? Because they can't drink and they can't socialize. They're sitting in their dorm rooms playing Texas Hold'em. You know, getting drunk and having a hangover. And again, I'm speaking for the many, not the few dummies who don't know how to handle things. But, you know, you give alcohol to people underage, they might be able to handle it. Or of age, if you lower the drinking age to 19 or so. Maybe even 20. I don't know. But if you do that, I think people can handle it. Gives them a chance to socialize, to be part of the community, part of something, especially if it's handled by college campuses, which was the proposal by a bunch of college presidents. Because I'll tell you, the point I was making is I can much easier handle a hangover with a couple aspirin and a Diet Coke than owing someone $1,000 because I didn't know when to stop in gambling. Pick your poison here. Because that's what's happening in a lot of these colleges. The kids have nothing to do. They can't go here. They can't go there. They start betting on everything. You know, and this Texas Hold'em is probably the scourge of the earth. I mean, what a game. Everybody's sitting there. How can you play poker with sunglasses on and a hat and a Walkman, stereo headphones? How is that poker? Where did the poker face come from if you got glasses on, a hat, and a Walkman? That shows you what kind of game it is. I played Texas Hold'em at a bachelor party one time, right? And you got guys who play, but you can't play it unless you're playing with professionals or people who think they're professionals. Because you get guys who stay in on a pair of twos, and it's like you're a schmuck. You shouldn't be staying in with a pair of twos. It's like, oh, but I beat you out. I got guts. You don't have guts. You're an idiot. You don't know how to play, and you're getting lucky. And guess what? You do that to me twice. The next time I'm staying in with my fives, and I'm going to beat your twos just to shut you up. Now you've made me mad. Now you've made me very mad. And the funny part is, I didn't think I was competitive at all. I don't consider myself competitive. I don't even like the word competitive. There's certain things, like if I'm playing pickup hockey, or not so much pickup hockey, but playing men's league hockey, playing basketball, yeah, I'd like to win. I want to win. But if I'm playing checkers or tiddlywinks, oh, he's competitive in checkers or tiddlywinks. It doesn't matter. You know what competitive is? It's a code word for jerk. You're a jerk. If you don't know, if you're so competitive that you can't play a game in a social atmosphere, then you're a jerk. You don't know any better. Oh, but these are guys who get on top. Yeah. But to what cost? At what cost? Have all your money, have your Jaguar, but what do you got friends? Nah, not really. You got to spend your money to get the friends, so they drink your alcohol, and then when it's done, they leave. Bam. I know everything. So what was I talking about? I got you, didn't I? I got you. Hey, the program's called Outside Looking In. My name is Bruce Negrin. I ramble like this every Tuesday night between 8 and 9 p.m. And if you stick in for the overtime just a little bit after 9, you might find some of these songs I'm playing. You know, I close out and then I play one or two more songs after. So we'll see what happens there. And, you know, got requests, don't call me because I got a limited number of songs to play. My phone number is 773-897-6423. That's 773-897-6423. But as I was saying before, talking about politics, there was an article by Dana Milbank. It was in the opinion page of the Washington Times. It's called "This Land Is My Land." No, it's not your land. It's the scariest article or editorial or anything that I've ever read that didn't talk about guns or Ebola or anything of that sort. It's talking about political partisanship. Political partisanship. And I got to read a couple excerpts from this. I have to read some a little bit more of the article than I want to, but it's very important. So here it goes. After a political rally last week in which Democrats criticized the Obama administration for siding with the Republicans on trade, Dana Milbank had a talk about the future of the party with Rep. Alan Grayson, a Florida Democrat who is one of the most ferocious partisans in the House. Grayson said, "It does no good for Democrats to pretend to be Republicans or to run corporate campaigns and try to pretend that they're going to govern from the middle." His rationale? There is no middle. There is no middle. He just told me I have no space. He told me I'm either because I lean right or I lean left, I'm one of them. There is no middle. Essentially, there are no undecided voters. Everybody has picked a team. The only question is, do your guys vote or not? Grayson explained. What matters, he said, is what side you are on. That justifies Grayson's incendiary politics. He's the guy who famously said the Republicans' health care plan is die quickly and called Republicans knuckle-dragging Neanderthals, unscrupulous, and the selfish party. He operates essentially under the same no-compromise logic that propels Ted Cruz and other Republican fanatics. And as much as I oppose their style of politics, Milbank says, I fear that their assessment of the electorate is correct. There are two things about this right off the bat. Is that, before I even go on, if you're on the far left, everything's been hijacked. You know, this guy is telling you, this kook, left-wing liberal, because there's no other way to say it. Because he's definitely, there is no middle. This is him defining it. He is on the far left. We're not going to say communist or socialist or anything of that sort, but you know the word progressive is in his thing. But he's able to do the name calling. He's able to get away with this. Knuckle-dragging Neanderthals. What did I tell you about arrogance of the liberal side? That's the problem. They're arrogant. They're not stubborn. They're arrogant. You don't agree with me. You don't agree with the way I think. You're a knuckle-dragging Neanderthal Republican. I don't appreciate that. Because I am by no means am I a Neanderthal. I have a sloping brow and beady eyes. I might be a good criminal, but I am not a Neanderthal. I lean right, buddy. I also lean left on certain issues. I can't say this enough. It bothers me that I have to say it every week. But somebody needs to speak up for the middle. For the middle. And the middle is a wide berth. It's a wide berth. It's just not one step to the right or one step to the left. It can sway a little bit. But it's not being irrational, illogical. It's not being non-compromising. Because guess what? You're as guilty as any fanatical Republican, Mr. Grayson. You think people want to vote for your programs or get on board behind you? You're the gridlock as well. You are the gridlock as well. And I don't appreciate that he can get away with all these names being said. And, you know, knuckle-dragging Neanderthal Republican. You know, up until the mid-1980s, the typical American held the view that partisans on the other side operated with good intentions. But that has changed in dramatic fashion, as a study published last year by Stanford and Princeton researchers demonstrates. It has long been agreed that I highlighted this like and underlined it five times. It's long been agreed that race is the deepest divide in American society. Let me read that again. It has long been agreed that race is the deepest divide in American society. But that is no longer true, says Shanto Iyengar and Sean Westwood, the academics who led the study. Using a variety of social science methods, for example, having study participants review resumes of people that make both their race and party affiliation clear, they document that the level of partisan animus in the American public exceeds racial hostility. Want me to put that in English? Americans now discriminate more on the basis of party than on race, gender, or any other divides we typically think of. And that discrimination extends beyond politics into personal relationships and non-political behaviors. It is over. It is over. It's over. Life as you and I knew it. Compromise as you and I knew it. It's over. William Henry Clay is turning over in his grave right now. John C. Calhoun is like, what the? Americans increasingly live in neighborhoods with like-minded partisans. I don't know how that happens. I moved here from New York. I didn't know if anybody thinks like me. Marry fellow partisans and disapprove of their children marrying mates from the other party. And they are more likely to choose partners based on partisanship than physical or personal attributes. What, are you nuts? Are you nuts? Has politics invaded our DNA this deeply? That we're going to pick a partner based, you're getting really upset, Bruce. Yes, I am, because I don't even know how to say this. If Gina was a wacko radical on either side, I wouldn't be with her. When I met her, she's a Democrat. Got married, we got two great kids, I love her to death. Simple and done. She sees my side on a lot of things, I see her side on a lot of things, and you know what? We've sort of mushed our party together to now. You know, and all these people say, oh, I'm independent. You are not independent. Shut up. Shut up, independent. What, do you think you're above the fray? You're not above the fray. Stop being independent. Get in the game. Oh, I put both parties to the side of me. So do I. I'm a Republican, but I still put both of the parties to the side of me because we have to strive for the middle ground. Do not let us get hijacked. Enough of being hijacked. Enough of Rush Limbaugh. Enough of Ron Kuby. Enough of people talking for us because these are the people grabbing the mics. Step up to the mic because no one's going to say it for you. They're the only ones talking right now. I mean, look what's happened to John Boehner. Now, you know, what do I know about John Boehner? What do I know about him? Enough. But this guy's getting killed by his own party because he's trying to get something done, a little bit at least. And he's got to run scared because of the Tea Party or whoever. You got Democrats. Oh, Hillary is too middle of the road. Because she knows how to govern? I mean, there are things I don't like about Hillary Clinton, and the things that I do like. But she's not, you know, we got to go with Alan Grayson. We got to call the Republicans knuckle-dragging Republicans. Because let me tell you something. When I read this article, it almost brought a tear to my eye. I was like the Indian when someone threw trash on the roadway. It brought a tear to my eye because I was running for a city council seat in the city of New Rochelle, walking around a neighborhood in the Pine Brook area, and I'm talking to my people from New Rochelle, but I want everybody in Montgomery that I know to hear the same message, because Montgomery is a pretty Democratic county as well. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I feel like The Rock. It just doesn't matter. The point of this story being that I was knocking on doors and like, oh, hi, I'm Bruce Negron. I'm running for city council. I understand that you got the problem here. You need a stop sign, and we're doing this, we're doing that, and we're going to work, and we're going to work hard for you. And I have real issues and real things because it's at the city council level, you can talk about real stuff. You can make significant and real change by one person because you can bring it up to six other people and have it discussed, unlike being a rep in 535 reps or 50 senators or whatever, 100 senators. Unlike that kind of committee, because all politics has been said is local, and it's the truth. Where do you pay your taxes? And who is your friend paying taxes? The federal government is more of your friend paying taxes than the state government is. How much do you owe federal? How much do you owe state? Think about that one. Right? Think about that one. Maryland dug so deep into my pocket, or our pocket, my wife's pocket and mine, that I'm not happy about that I made this move. For what? For what? But what I'm saying here is all politics are local. This is where it starts. Who picks up your garbage? Who makes sure the sewers are built, the streets are cleaned, the streets, the potholes are repaired? The local guys, not Obama. So when you go out to vote in your presidential election, you thinking you're doing your duty. You are not. You're doing a disservice to yourself and your neighbors, of the people who live next to you, of the people who live on Quince Orchard, the people who live on Stony Bridge Way, on the people who live on Surrey Drive or Westwood. When you go out there and only vote in the big election, the presidential election, you're not changing anything. Politics is local. All politics is local. That's what you have to remember. But again, you also got to go out there and understand who's talking. Press the issue, especially in local, because they will give you the time of day. I've talked to more people. When I ran for office, I got close to 1,000 votes. I'd say 900 and some odd votes. But I bet you I talked to every single one of those 900 and some odd votes. I literally, and I know this is the, let's start the violence here. I literally wore out a pair of shoes going door to door. Can't really do that in Montgomery County. It's too spread out. But New Rochelle, in the city of New Rochelle, I could, and I did. I had help. My dad was out there with me. He's like, vote on my son, Ski. Go ahead, vote for him. He's a good kid. Yeah, he's a good kid. Yeah. He'll buy you ice cream. My dad helped me out so much, I went to Friendly's and I bought him a Fribble. Anybody who knows Friendly's ice cream shops and a Fribble, how great they taste in the 90-degree day. Fribble. But anyway, the point of this story is, I was walking in Pine Brook, I was walking down Robert Lane, whatever, it doesn't matter, I don't know the street. I get to a door, I talk to this lady, she's like, oh, you're a nice young man. She goes, what party are you in? And I never led with my party, because what's the difference, especially on the local side? What's the difference? I can't, you know, I'm not changing abortion. I'm not changing gay rights on the local side at city council. I can have my opinions on it, but I'm not changing anything on that. I said, ma'am, she goes, I'm a Republican. She goes, oh, a Republican. I can't believe I wasted my time talking to you. Oh, right. You know, nothing made me so mad. I walked back to the people I was with walking up and down the block, and I said, oh, I want to go and rip that door off. She was saying, oh, you're such a sweet boy. You're a good young man. And then she found out what party I'm in, and she slammed the door in my face. She goes, you tell George Bush. I said, you know what? The next time I'm in Washington and I have lunch with George Bush, I will tell him, you idiot. And you know what? I don't mean to talk about constituents like that or potential constituents like that. Idiot. I don't want to call him an idiot, but that was an idiot thing. That was a knuckle-dragging Neanderthal response. I answered every single one of her questions, and she was on my side until she found out what party I was in. How do you live your life like that? You talk about don't judge a book by its cover. You know what? Maybe it is time to start that third party, that middle party, middle of the road, the common sense party, Tom Paine, etc., blah, blah, blah. Because it is getting frustrating, these labels, and especially, and you know what? I will go on the other side and say for Democrats who are middle of the road as well. Democrats who want fiscal responsibility but are a bit more open on social issues. Or whatever. I don't care. I don't care. You could sway to the right. You could lean. You could almost touch the ground. That's how much you're leaning to the left. But you're not on the aisle by the door, right? You're not that far left. We can talk. We can figure something out. What's happening here is like there was a mayor in New Rochelle called Mayor Noam Bramson, and he never got upset at anybody. He was always like the thinking man, the Harvard, and he's almost touching the door in terms of progressive, right? Progressive. He's almost so far left, he's almost touching the door. He's almost at the exit. But anyway, he's like, I will not get into debate with you over this because it's been meaning, be a professional, blah, blah, blah. But then again, he carries the thing. He found out. He called me. This is the greatest story of all time, too, because this is when I moved back to New Rochelle. I believed in some of the things that he was doing, some of the things he had asked for in his budget. I was there for it. I liked it. I went to a lot of his meetings, heard what he had to say. you know, and all of this kind of stuff. And I actually spoke on his behalf. He called me up. He's like, Bruce, will you speak on the budget for me and at the city council meetings? Will you speak on my behalf on the budget? I said, Mr. Mayor, I will gladly speak on to the positions of this. I cannot touch paragraph 4. I'm not really sure I believe in paragraph 4. But you know what he was like? That's fine. You know, I will never ask you not to speak what you don't believe. But if you believe in what I'm writing or what I'm campaigning for, then go ahead. I gave money to his campaign. $100, Bruce Degren, bam, 7 Westwood Avenue. Guess what happens one day? He finds out I'm a Republican. I don't even know if the word blackball is fits here. What's the word? What's onyx? You know, I mean, black didn't even, it doesn't even fit. It's not dark enough color. That guy kicked me to the curb because I was a Republican. I could get with some of the stuff he was talking about, but once he found out I was a Republican, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I'm a Democrat. I would never vote for a Republican. I don't need Republicans with me. That's why you're still Mayor Nurishel, you big... Guy ran in 2 other elections, beat twice. Got, you know, he can win as mayor in Nurishel because Nurishel is so democratic. They drink the Kool-Aid so much over there. Everything is wonderful in Nurishel. They don't question anything. And if you question something, you're a contrarian. No, I'm not a contrarian. If you can answer my question with a reasonable answer, then I'm on your side. I hear what you're saying. I'll be part of it. But this guy, Noam Branson, you know, he leads the Minions. He's Gru. He's Gru from Despicable Me. Looks like Gru, too. You know, looks like Peter Lorre from the old movies. Yes, boss. Yes. Now that I'm 250 miles away, I can take personal shots, personal attacks. Internet radio, that's what we do. But anyway, this guy, I mean, talk about putts. And that's what it was, a putts. You know, this guy, if he asked me how to win an election, I could have told him. But he was so blind in his ways, you know, he's going to be mayor of Nurishel for the rest of his life because he can't win anything bigger because of his thought process and because of how he, you know, how he portrays himself. You need middle of the road. Otherwise, Republicans will marshal their forces and come out against you. If people don't like you enough, like you personally enough, they will find a reason to get out and vote 3 times. We all go to the Bosch Tweed Tammany Hall School so we can get out there and vote 3 times. But this partisanship is ridiculous. I mean, it really scares me because it's gone. I mean, we the most divisive thing in the United States now is political parties and not race. I mean, good. At least maybe we could find some good out of that. It's not race anymore. Maybe we don't think of it as race anymore, right? But it's political partisanship. You know, and it's gerrymandering these districts. The article went on to say it's like by the hyper-partisanship comes from neighborhoods. And so these guys who are getting elected are coming from neighborhoods that have been gerrymandered. You know, now they're speaking for their constituents. But that scares me more than anything. I don't know. It really does. It said because what this article said is that I have no place in the United States anymore. I have no place in politics. I have no opinion. I have to pick a team. There are no undecideds. According to you, there's not, you arrogant son of a Alan Grayson, a Florida Democrat. You know, it's disheartening. That's what it is. It's disheartening. And then I posted on the articles on my Facebook page. We got an Outlook, Outside Looking In on Facebook. You just type that in, you can see it. Or it's on my regular Facebook at Bruce Degren. But Outside Looking In, if you type in those words with Bruce Degren, it will pop up to my Facebook page. While you're there, why don't you like it? If you like the program, like it. And I put up all these articles in so you get to read for yourself. You get to see what I'm talking about. So you just don't say, oh, the Washington Post. I don't want to bastardize anybody. I don't want to put words in anybody's article. But again, I read them and I compute them, and this is what I come up with. And that one is crazy. absolutely crazy. The phone number is 773-897-6423. Again, that phone number is 773-897-6423. My name is Bruce Negrin. The program is called Outside Looking In with Bruce Negrin. That's me. And we're here every Tuesday night from 8 to 9 p.m. talking about the issues that emanate from Montgomery County and obviously from beyond. It was something I was reading in the paper, you know, 20 years Oklahoma bombing, Oklahoma City National Memorial and Museum. Boy, you remember when that happened? Everyone's like, terrorism, terrorism, was terrorism, homegrown terrorism. Timothy McVeigh, you son of a, you know, there's another guy I just want to slap. I wanted to slap him because it's like, what are you thinking about? That and the shoe bomber. The shoe bomber has caused more problems for anybody in airports. There's a guy you just want to slap in the face a bunch of times. Say, you, not only did you do something that's terrible, you created one of the greatest inconveniences of all time. But this memorial on the 20th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing, so there was a Ride to Remember Memorial motorcycle run on Saturday. Now, I want to step away from the memorial itself, but I want to talk about motorcycle, you know, the Harley-Davidson crew, et cetera. You know, this is another thing I want to say, is like, just because you ride a Harley-Davidson doesn't make you more American than I. I don't understand why these guys are the Americans. America. America. Because you ride a Harley-Davidson, you're more American than I. You get to wave a flag harder than I ever could, right? Tired of that. I mean, really, think about it. I have a deep love for this country. I really do love this country. When I went overseas, I mean, that's what all you have to do sometimes is go overseas. Yeah, there might be nicer places. Go to France. Go to Paris. The Disneyland, the real Disneyland. Not the Disneyland out in the outskirts of Paris, but Paris is Disneyland. It's a tourist trap with 9 million people in there running around from different places. It was amazing because my wife and I, we had our Frommer's book or the DK book. We saw them in Ukrainian. We saw them in Bangladesh. You know, it was in every language. And France doesn't like tourists. Well, that's what's keeping you afloat, France. That's what's keeping you afloat, especially you, Paris. We did go to Mont-Saint-Michel out in Brittany, and we also went to Normandy, which if you ever go over to France, you got to go to Normandy. You have to go. It's just overwhelming. That's overwhelming. I mean, if you have any sense of history, any sense of D-Day, any sense of the longest day, you see those beaches, and you're just like, how the hell did they do that? You talk about giving yourself up for a cause. God bless you. God bless you. So I'm reading the Washington Post, and they're talking about Scott Walker. Scott Walker now, the governor of Wisconsin. Walker is touting his regular guy cred, paints his rivals as out of touch. You know, saying that Hillary Clinton's probably never seen the inside of a coal. Hey, you know what? I have seen the inside of a Kohl's, and I don't want to go back. I've learned a very good lesson. My brother taught me this lesson. Instead of buying 5 shirts on the cheap that are going to get ruined in the laundry, buy 1 or 2 nice ones and wear the hell out of those. Now that I work from home, I have too many clothes. I work out of the house. I have too many clothes. And my problem is I've always been one of these things. I can't wear that. It's too nice. I don't want to ruin my nice clothes. That's the thing about when you're a kid, when your mom always puts you in your nice clothes. Don't get them dirty. Don't get them dirty. They're your nice clothes. So you put them away, so you never wear anything nice ever because you're like, oh, I can't get it dirty. Is this really a nice clothes event? Do I put on my nice clothes for this event? It's outside. It's a barbecue. I might get a stain on it. I can't put on my nice clothes. So you put on your ratty old stuff and go out there from Kohl's. That's the problem. So, you know, I wake up in the morning, I got a pair of shorts that I ruined because I was bleaching my deck, so it sprayed a little bit on my shorts, my base shorts, and now I got spots on them. But I wear those 3 times a week, you know, to get out of bed and take the kids to the bus, et cetera, and stuff. That's the problem from working at home. I made a choice to myself. I can't go into a store anymore because if I go to Macy's, oh, it's a nice red shirt, I should buy that. Not that I go out and buy everything, but I got 3 nice red shirts that I don't wear already. I need to clear out my closet. If you ever see a movie, it's called Crazy Stupid Love. It's with Ryan Gosling and Steve Carell. And Gosling takes Steve Carell under his wing, and he says, you know what, kid? What kid? He says to Steve Carell, you know, Gosling's like the slick guy, getting all the girls. Steve Carell is just getting into a divorce, whatever. But he slaps him across the face. He goes, this is how you come out to see me? In these jeans and New Balance sneakers? Because of that movie, I will never wear New Balance sneakers. But he said, all you need is like 10 things. And you can mix and match, and all you need is 10 things at the age of like 45. And he was right. And that's what I got to do. I got to go shopping with Ryan Gosling. But I think I would look pretty silly if I had like a pull-up sweater and some chinos going to the bus stop. With all the other mothers who are wearing all these fleeces that they've been wearing since 1971. The fleece has taken over the house coat. Remember your grandmother used to have a house coat? That quilted thing? Well, the fleece is taking it over. Everybody just puts on the fleece. Oh, I got to be comfy. So they got drought in California. Shocker. You live in the desert. It's like when they start, one of the things, it's like this is why you have to travel and you have to go out and see things. Because I went to Las Vegas, Nevada about 12 years ago. And I was amazed by Las Vegas. You know, I mean, this was just before it turned family time, so the buffets were great. You know, for $8.99, you could eat whatever you wanted. Before they tried to nickel and dime you because all these families were coming. You know, once the families came, I went back. And it's like, oh, you know, $9 for a can of beer. You know, to take the Lazy River, it's $20 to get an inner tube to go there. It's like, ah, what happened to when you just took my money at the gambling table? And I'm one of these guys who's going to try to gamble. I don't gamble anymore. I never had a problem. But it was one day I learned that I just didn't like losing money, and I wasn't having fun losing money. You know, the first time I went to Vegas, I was with a bunch of friends, I was at a convention, and I met a bunch of friends out there. I was living in Georgia, and all my New York guys came back out. So I'm sitting there, and I'm seeing people from, like, New Rochelle and stuff, guys I played hockey with years ago. Everybody was out in Las Vegas. It was like a New Rochelle convention. It was awesome. But anyway, I'm sitting there and playing craps. I never played craps before. I was always afraid of it. The game was too fast moving for me. So one time I sat there in the afternoon. I watched this. I'm going to play craps. Everybody seems like they're having fun. Ran into the bunch of guys I was talking about. We went to the craps table. And lo and behold, Schmucko wins in his first, you know, wins $400-$500 in his first try at the craps table. And we're like, oh, you know, screaming and yelling because the craps table players are always the loudest when the table's hot. And I'm throwing out dollar bills, you know, dollar yo, for the deal, for this, for that, you know, Mr. Big Shot. Vegas, Mikey, Vegas. You know, and it's really funny. So next time I went out there, I didn't have my friends, I didn't have my boys, I'm playing with the old men. Or even that trip, I was playing with the old men. Everybody went home and my flight got delayed. I was there for an extra day. I found myself at, I don't know, Caesars or wherever I was. And I was like, the cocktail waitress comes around and it's like, I'll have a Budweiser, please. She's like, okay, great, great. And then she goes over to the old man who's on the oxygen tank and still smoking. That's great. And then she goes over to the other blue hair and the other old lady and this and says, I'll have coffee, miss. Give me some coffee and a Danish if you can find it. Okay, thank you. Put $2 on that. $2 on the high-low, please, and $5 on the pass line. And I'm like, man, all these old people are here. They're drinking coffee. I'm not winning. This isn't fun. Finally, I look at my watch. 8:15 in the morning. What? 8:15 in the morning. I should be drinking coffee, not beer. I was out for like 24 hours. Then I went down to Shreveport one time. I had some friends in Shreveport, Louisiana, and all during the South, and all in the South, you know, there's riverboat gambling. As long as you're docked in the river, you know, as long as you're not on, you know, Christopher Columbus solid ground, and you're in the river, you can gamble. So I started gambling there. You know, so if anybody goes to Shreveport and sees a blue size L shirt, you know, 34 cuff, if you see it laying around, pick it up because that's mine. Because I lost my shirt there. Anyway, so I started losing, and I didn't enjoy it anymore. The only game I would win at a casino is called ATM. I would go up there and play the same four numbers, and I would win money each time. It was funny, though. I was with my wife. We're at the ATM, and money comes out, and I just start screaming, woohoo, woohoo. Everybody looks around like, what's going on? I said, I'm winning. This game ATM's the best. I'm winning. I'm winning. People are like, you schmuck. I got a couple people to laugh, but it was a pretty silly thing to do, but it was what I do. It's what I do. So the point being here, after all the casinos, all of this stuff, I had no money left. I had nothing. I went out to go play golf, another waste of money. So I go out, and I'm on this pristine golf course, just a public course, not that, you know, cost me $50 or something. But I'm on this pristine golf course in the desert. I hit a ball to the left, and it's where Las Vegas ended. Green, lush grass everywhere. And then all of a sudden, your ball's to the left, and you're a couple feet away from those mountains, those huge mountains. And it's desert. You know, and then you go see the movie Bugsy, and it's desert. Of course you're going to run out of water. You're in the desert. Pumping in water there, you got to have people survive. You can't be having lush green golf ranges when you don't have any water. Everybody's got a swimming pool and pumped water and the Bellagio and all that. I'm sure it's all recycled waters. But still, people have green lawns. It's the desert. I feel like Sam Kinison, Smokey, Smokey, it's the desert. Of course you're going to have a drought. California, you're part of the desert. San Diego, you're part of Mexico. You're the desert. I mean, drought in California, 4-year drought. Isn't this what the Grapes of Wrath was about? I don't know. So a minute ago, I was talking about bias from the Washington Post. They're talking about Scott Walker and the, I don't want to say bias, but a slant. The slant for the Washington Post is definitely about same-sex marriage. They are so pro for it that they can't let an article go by or a weekend section or even a style section go by where they don't feature something about same-sex marriage. And in the same newspaper, all right, on the same day, just I think it was this past Tuesday, they're talking about Walker and touting his Kohl's, you know, that he's much more the working man than Hillary Clinton ever will be or anybody else in his party, et cetera, and so forth. But then again, here it goes. Walker has been aggressively courting religious conservatives, said several times this weekend that he believes marriage is defined as between a man and a woman. He did note Saturday that he has been to a reception for a gay family member. Rebecca Rutter, a Derry Republican, asked Walker about same-sex marriage Sunday and said she was disappointed by his response, where he reiterated his view and said his preference would be to let the states decide the issue. I worry that my party is on the wrong side of history, she said. Fade to black. At the end of the article. They're talking about Scott Walker doing this, doing that, changing the world, the fighting Hillary Clinton, doing all that. They ended on that question, and that I'm worrying my party's on the wrong side of history. So in the style section, there's a thing about online dating, and it says, date like a cop. You know, and it goes through all these things about how the questions that should be asked and all this thing. And at the end, it ends up with two men cops who found love on the internet because they acted like cops. But I mean, I feel like Seinfeld, nothing wrong with it. There isn't anything wrong with it. What's wrong with it is throwing it into my face every day. I don't want to see naked women every day. I don't want to see people kissing every day. I don't want to see everything. I don't want to see the same thing every day. It's just stop throwing your agendas at me. Everybody's got an agenda. And they try to hide it and they try to be subtle about it. But it's not subtle anymore because, you know, the loudest mouth gets the oil. The squeaky wheel gets the oil. Let's keep hammering home this point. It bothers me. It really does bother me. Not the issue itself, but it's the way the Washington Post is presenting this issue, the way they're slanting it. You know, you got a Scott Walker article, and again, I'm not talking about endorsing Scott Walker here, but this one thing about what he thinks about gay marriage or same-sex marriage, they have a whole article, and then you kill it in the last paragraph, fade to black, and then you have a whole article about same-sex dating in your style section. Don't tell me you're not pushing something, especially when you read about same-sex couples really every other day in the Washington Post. I lived in New York City. New York City, by the way. I lived in the West Village. The West Village. Across the street from me was a place called the Cubbyhole. Down about, we had some friends who lived in Chelsea. They lived on 21st and 7th. The name of the bar on the corner of their block was called the Manhole. I lived in Gay Central. Never had a problem. I don't like seeing a man and a woman make out on the street, let alone a man and a man or a woman and a woman or whatever. But, I mean, it's just one of those things. Don't paint me as a Neanderthal, Grayson, because I'm not. I get along with people, but I just don't like when people throw it in your face. This is who I am. I'm loud and I'm proud. Shut up. Move to the back a little bit, please. I know who you are. What makes you better than me? And that's what it's coming out to be. Everybody thinks they're more entitled than somebody else because they wear a badge of something. I sound like a curmudgeon. I am a curmudgeon. I told you this. I passed the line. I've crossed the line. I'm either 47 or 48. I have no idea. I really don't have any idea, and I refuse to look it up anymore. What else is making me crazy? I wrote something down on my show topics here. If you want to get on it, you can just email me at Bruce Negron Radio, excuse me, brucenegronradio@yahoo.com. If you want to lay something on me, if you're a little too, have some trepidation about calling the program at 773-897-6423. Again, that's 773-897-6423. If you don't want to call the program, you want to get your point across, hit me off at brucenegronradio@yahoo.com or Outside Looking In on Facebook. But I was talking about, or I wrote something in my show outlines here, talking about marijuana legalization. You know, the district has legalized marijuana. And this is another thing. This is why white people are stupid. You know, everyone's, oh, we're going to make big business out of legalized marijuana. We're gonna have a marijuana convention at the downtown Sheraton. We're going to grow seeds. We're going to wave flags. We're going to make stuff out of hemp. You know why they did it? You know why they did it? So African-American men who got busted with pot wouldn't be going to jail for 6 to 10 to 15, 20 months. They did it to ease the gridlock of the jail system and the court system. They didn't do it to make it an industry. Bob Marley, man, Bob Marley. He knows what the weed's about. Everybody's got to make a business out of something. They did it to protect the people of the district who were getting caught. You know, I'm not a big dope smoker. I'm not a dope smoker at all. But I understand, you know, as long as you do it in your own little sphere away from me. And that's the thing people are getting upset about. It's like, oh, how dare Muriel Bowser say that I can't smoke in the street. You can't smoke in the street. You can't even smoke cigarettes in the street anymore. You're going to smoke marijuana? But I'll tell you where they should legalize marijuana. And the reason they should legalize it, I went to a grade K, a kindergarten youth soccer game, and they should legalize it because of kindergarten youth soccer. What they should do is make every parent who comes into the soccer plex in Montgomery County take a hit just to calm the heck down. Saturday morning at 10 a.m., I had never been so uppity and mad and nervous and nerve-wracked than I was at 10 a.m. on a Saturday because of my kid playing youth soccer. And why? Because these parents can't shut up. And these coaches can't shut up. You got kids out there in grade K, kindergartners. When you yell their name, when you say, Joey, Joey, and the ball is coming to Joey and it's Joey's feet, and you yell at Joey saying, Joey, kick the ball. What do you think Joey's going to look? Joey's going to look to the sidelines at his parents, and someone's going to take the ball away from him because you distracted the hell out of him. Run faster. Do this. I mean, it's not malicious. I don't want to say the parents are yelling at their kids in a malicious way, but they just let the kids play. I had to pick up my chair and move to the other side of the field. Everyone was on one side. I moved to the other side of the field because I want to sit there and watch my son Landon. Yeah, I could yell at him too. And I, you know, inside I felt some of the urges. Landon, get in the game. Come on. That's just the coach in me. You know, I coached youth hockey before. I've coached youth sports before. It's in me. But if I get up and yell, Landon, he's going to like, what, Dad? And the ball's going to go right by him. Parents need to calm the heck down, man. Have a drink, you know. Let's not legalize, but have a drink, you know. I just don't get it. You soccer games. I don't get it. I mean, the kids aren't 13 years old. They're 5 and 6. Stop yelling at them because you're not helping. That's why I love coaching hockey. Because on the hockey rink, that glass made a huge difference, whether it's practice or games, because the parents can't get on the ice. They can't get to their kids until the game is over. They can't get to me until the game is over. After the game, I'll talk to you. Don't come down here and start telling me what I need to do during the game. Stop talking to your kid during the game. Well, Joey, you can't really pass to this guy. You got to take it down the field. You got to do it yourself. No one's passing to you. He's in kindergarten! I was mad all day. That whole thing set off my day in such a way. I was literally mad. I didn't want to be mad. I went out with my wife and a friend, and I said, I must be a bad date. Because this thing had really gotten under my skin. It had gotten under my skin. The other thing that got under my skin about youth sports is I got my son Ryan playing baseball. Guy's got hand-eye coordination. He can put the ball in play. I'm happy about that. He's still learning how to catch. The coach comes up to me after, and again, I try to stay away. It's like having coached, I try to stay away. I don't get too involved. I don't sit on the fence. I don't sit in the field. I keep my space, let the coaches coach. These guys, one or two, one guy seems to know what he's doing. The other guy is like, okay. But he comes over to me and goes, who's Ryan's parent? I go, I am. He goes, you know, with Ryan, you should take his glove. He seems to be having problems closing his glove. You should take a ball and put some string around it with some oil and put it under your bed. I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I played varsity baseball. I played varsity. I know what I'm doing. And you know what? I appreciated the fact that he came over here to talk to me. I really did. But I don't appreciate the fact that he didn't give me a chance to say, even when I was trying to pause. I'm thinking, said, you know, Dave, I've been doing this. I've tied up his glove. His glove is tied up for a week when we were in Florida. I brought it with me and retied it every night and re-oiled. I've been doing it. Maybe the kid should close his glove. Maybe the kid, because I went to Ryan the other day. I mean, I was embarrassed. So I went to Ryan the other day. I said, let me see that glove. He's just now closing his hand. I don't want to blame somebody, but it's like, Ryan, you got to close your hand on the ball when you got it done. But I was the condescended to parent. You really should put some oil on it and put a belt around it. I felt like he was telling me what's in a BLT sandwich. Well, there's bacon, lettuce, and tomato. Oh, okay, thank you. Got about 90 seconds left. I want to talk about one other thing. I know that all of you people have been waiting about this, the National Hockey League playoffs. It's a tale of two seasons, and I think it's ridiculous. Some of you might turn off the program here right now, but let me say this. If you're going to call ticky-tack fouls and no interference and no slashing, and you know, you're creating two different games. Seasoned hockey, regular season hockey, ticky-tack fouls, ticky-tack penalties. We're in control. That's an interference. That's a slash. You get to the playoffs. I mean, I'm watching the Canadiens. I'm not even talking about the Rangers right now. And you know, I'm totally biased about the Rangers. But I'm talking about watching Montreal play Ottawa. I mean, someone's going to really get hurt there. The PK Subban slash, the spearing. I mean, everything that they tell you is a major penalty these guys are doing. And the refs put their whistles away. It's playoff hockey. You got to be a man. Well, if that's the case, let's go back to being a man during the regular season, too. Refs are doing a terrible job. Terrible job. Tomorrow's Earth Day. Recycle, do what you have to do. Let's have a concert to raise awareness, because that's what you do now. If you have a cause, let's have a concert. Anyway, I'm done. My name is Bruce Negrin, and the program's called Outside Looking In. I'm here every Tuesday night between 8 and 9 p.m. talking about the issues that emanate from Montgomery County and obviously beyond. So do me a favor, everybody. Step up to the mic, because nobody's going to say it for you. And lastly, do something today that's going to make you better tomorrow. That's the only thing I can ask. The only thing I can ask. But maybe I can ask this.
My hands on down.